You're listening to the Family Matters Podcast, brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Join Derek A. Straker and Patrick Webb weekly for faith-fueled conversations about pressing issues, current events, and politics in the Big Sky State. When it comes to faith and freedom, family really matters. Welcome back to the Family Matters Podcast. Derek A. Straker in studio with Patrick Webb, as always. Patrick, how are you doing today?
As always, I'm doing great.
All right.
Well, especially today, I'm doing good.
Well, you know, the sun is out. It's feeling like spring here in Montana. That's always beneficial to my mood. Mm-hmm. You know, we've made it through winter. I don't want to jinx anything because as soon as they say that, it'll snow next week. But feeling positive.
Yeah.
Feeling empowered by the sun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And feeling positive about this episode. I'm not entirely certain the direction it's going to go, but you know, you and I've been talking for weeks about this feeling as we travel the state, as we talk with folks, you know, that we can feel it and it's measurable to some extent, especially in the work that you do, that there is an awakening, or there is, you know, a hunger and a thirst to, you know, get involved from a Judeo-Christian perspective in the issues of the day. Mm-hmm. And to defend marriage and family and life. Mm-hmm. I mean, we feel it and we've been talking about it, but we've come to some, and we've done some research, you know, in leading up to this episode, and it's just an interesting discussion. So I'm excited for that, Patrick.
Yeah. In my work, I get to travel around the state and work with people all over, and I'm constantly on the phone, making phone calls to people. And just today, I talked to two different individuals. Well, three individuals who I didn't know who they were. And I'm trying to verify some of these folks for some of the trainings that we're doing. And some of the people locally in their area, they don't know who these people are. And so I call these people just to try to get to know them a little bit before we, plug them into some of our efforts. And all three of them were individuals that had said that they're like not usually involved. They attend, you know, a local church in whatever community it was. And they just see that there's a lot going on and that they can't just sit back, that they feel like they have to do something and get involved, and that they are connected to a group of similar people in their church or in their, you know, local community who maybe haven't been involved before, but they just feel this need to do something because they're like sitting on pins and needles. They're anxious. There's like so much energy in the air and they just don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So they want to get involved. And I think, we don't want to exclude those folks because we don't know who they are. We need to find these people and we need to get them involved. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you tell me all the time, these folks at your trainings and at your get togethers, you know, people that have never done anything like this before, mm-hmm. are getting involved. We're seeing it with our church ambassador network here in Montana, mm-hmm. churches and pastors, talking with our director, Keith Downey, that are hungry, mm-hmm. to engage, mm-hmm. and to fill that role of a shepherd for elected leaders and for state officials. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's exciting on the one hand, but on the other hand, you know, what does it represent? Is there a vacuum being created? Mm-hmm. Is there some void that, you know, the church and Christians, as well as non-Christians, are trying to fill? Is there a power struggle that's imminent for our society, for our culture? You know, and we've talked about this. You know, there seems to be a point in time where this changed for not just for Montana, but around the world. And it's in recent memory. We were just talking about this, Patrick. COVID, mm-hmm. the pandemic, this was, I mean, it's hard to even remember what were things like in 2019 and before, when we weren't dealing with a global pandemic and mask mandates and vaccination mandates and things like that. I mean, it seems like we took a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn, depending on which way you're looking at it, towards something that none of us could have predicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people would describe it as the I want to go back to the old normal.
Right.
And then you would start to hear there's no going back to the old normal. We are now headed in a direction that we're not going backwards. So we're only going forwards. But what does that look like? And I think it really has something to do with just society's views of our institutions that have largely been put in place by our ruling class over century plus. And it feels like, you know, like we're very blessed in Montana to have, you know, a government that largely works for the people pretty well. In other states, definitely not so much. Our federal government, absolutely not. It doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like, you know, Congress gets together and they figure out where they can send not just like our money, but money that doesn't exist. Like they're literally inflating our money supply to send money off to every other place except for anyone in our own country. Mm. And people are having a hard time buying groceries. You know, they're having a hard time paying for daycare, paying for rent, property taxes, whatever it is. It doesn't matter where you're at on the political spectrum. Everyone, to some degree, you know, unless you're very, very fortunate, seem to be struggling. And so this, like, there is a loss of faith in the people that are making the decisions.
In institutions.
Yeah. About what's happening. And it's, again, like I said, it's not just being felt from Christians, conservatives, Republicans, whatever. I mean, the left feels this as well. It seems like, and I think we recognize this by, I mean, they have massive turnout, at a lot of their efforts as well. And I think everyone recognizes that the institutions across our society need to change. They either need reformed or, just to speak frankly, they need to be destroyed and recreated. Mm. Because it feels like, you know, corruption is just so rampant and just everywhere that we need something better. We need something better that works for the people, because it just doesn't work, and it doesn't work for really anyone, it seems like.
Well, and this is something that you and I've talked about as well. You've talked about this book called The Fourth Turning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an idea, and you can explain it better than I can. But
it's, you know, it hinges around that idea of the saeculum, which is the cycle of history that exists, whether we recognize it or not. And that when there is a creation of a new series of institutions, and so we'll say, you know, the current cycle that we're in, it began following World War II, is kind of the idea. And there was new institutions that were created. We had a massive evolution of industry that took place after World War II, because everything was ramped into gear for war efforts.
Right.
But the effect of that was industry had massive investment. And right, we were able to see large growth in technological innovation. And that, you know, that changed our society. There was a lot of new institutions and ways to do things that were created out of that structure. And so, you know, the generation that fought for that and created that, they're very proud of their work, and they worked to make sure that it was running the best that it could. The second generation after that, the next generation, they still care about this. They still care about these things. They saw their parents create these things. They want to continue them on. the next generation after that, they are starting to become pretty far removed from the creation of those institutions, and they just see them straight up for what they are. And they're starting to see that they're not working as great as they think they might be able to do it. Mm-hmm. The next generation after that, and this is supposedly the generation that we are in now, is a generation that views these institutions as being riddled with corruption. They don't work at all. They need to be destroyed. And so the saeculum largely has these four cycles or four turnings. And supposedly the 2008 financial collapse keyed and triggered the fourth turning, the winter cycle.
That's the hypothesis of William Strauss and Neil Howe, authors of the fourth turning. And part of that idea is that there's a ruling class or some higher authority on Earth, at least, that understands this cyclical, I guess, concept that then, is making sure that they are positioning to take over whenever these institutions are recreated.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an even deeper component to it, because it's like, if you recognize that this could be something that makes sense, and I would say I think it does make sense. I think it largely pans out. These guys in this book, they track it throughout history, and it tracks pretty good.
And is this it's not necessarily a Christian perspective on cycles in history, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of a perspective of cycles in history. And I mean, when I read it, one thing that I recognized was it's almost like a natural refreshing that God has put into place through through time, that exists in time. And it's, I think a lot of it has to do with human nature and how we react during different phases of time, different periods of time. But imagine that you have a society that is so corrupt and degenerate to such a degree that it is just causing mass suffering for everyone. If there is a natural cycle of the generations of people pushing back on that and actually destroying that system to create something new that actually works for people and is good, that seems like a really cool thing that maybe God put in place. I mean, that's what I think.
What I think of is King Solomon in Ecclesiastes 1:9. He says, "What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun." Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I certainly think, you know, that's why there's that old adage, you know, those that have failed to learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
And yeah.
I think that's the human condition to some extent, is that we've just been doomed to repeat it over and over again.
Yeah.
We're fallen. Mm-hmm. We're a fallen creation, and we need the redemption of our creator.
Yeah. And I guess if you're people who are in charge and you're trying to set the direction for, say, China, you know, because we all hear about how they have like a 100-year plan, is how they kind of think. Every government in the world, and even extra governmental, you know, ruling elite, like the WEF, I'm thinking about international organizations. Mm. They're trying to figure out how to invest, how to make changes and stuff. And so if they're like, oh, well, there is a natural awakening taking place, we need that to work to our advantage for our worldview. We need to make sure that ours comes in place. I think that that's what we're seeing. I think that we're seeing different competing international groups that are trying to vie for control of that space. I think there's nation states that are trying to vie for that space. And I think that there are cultural subsects that are trying to vie for that space. And I think as Christians and with a Christian worldview, we have to think about this is real. Like, this is happening around us. People sense it. God is making us aware to what it is. We cannot sit on the sidelines and not be involved in carrying our ideas to the forefront and advocating for our ideas. We have to be engaged in the battle place of ideas. so that, you know, we can hopefully forge a better world.
Right. Well, and it's interesting to think about that, because, you know, we have to recognize and acknowledge that, you know, there are other perspectives. And if we have this cycle that repeats over and over again in history, and we're on the precipice of some sort of new institution or institutions, and there's a vying for who's going to control that. From our Christian perspective, we want to cede that authority to Almighty God and have mm-hmm. him direct our lives. That's certainly where we get our moral compass from. You know, that's our God. But from a non-Christian perspective, if you place your faith in something other than God, if you're worshiping something other than the one true God, you know, what are you placing your faith in? Some might say that you're placing your faith in government, and that government or the state aspires to be God. Certainly there's some parallels there. If you think of China, which you brought up, mm-hmm. You know, think of the social credit system that they've established with cameras on every street corner and the government monitoring your interactions with other people in society. Government is becoming omniscient, so to speak, mm-hmm. and omnipresent, mm-hmm. so to speak. It's aspiring to be deity.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. I listened to Pastor Doug Wilson from Christ Church in Moscow, mm-hmm. Idaho, talking about this very thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is some acknowledgement and some recognition in our church as a whole, across the nation, that we're on the precipice of something. Mm-hmm. Something's coming. And we may not be exactly sure what that is, but we should at least acknowledge that the other side's feeling it too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're vying for power and control, hearts and minds,
mm-hmm.
in the same way that we are. We've talked about the culture war, the destruction and replacement of one ethos and viewpoint and worldview for another. You know, that's the battle that's going on. And if we're on the precipice here of a fourth turning,
mm-hmm.
and we got to be prepared for what's coming on the other side.
Mm-hmm. And we got to keep loving our neighbors. We have to continue to be diplomatic, I think, about this. The inclination feels like there's just a growth in hate for different viewpoints. And we have to reject that as long as possible. I mean,
well, let's go to the word, because we've been talking about this. And, you know, if you're listening at home, turn to Matthew 24. That's where we want to talk about this. And let me preface this. We are not discussing eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
We're not taking any position on, you know, end times prophecy. We're talking about this feeling as we travel the state that people recognize there's a need to wake up. There's a need to get involved. You and I have talked about this idea that, you know, people don't get involved until they're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And people are getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So in Matthew 24, it's Jesus's disciples coming to him and in private saying, tell us, when will these things be and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And Jesus answers in verse 4, see that no one leads you astray. I don't want to stop there, because that's the first point that Jesus is making here, is don't be deceived. See that no one leads you astray. And it continues, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pains. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another, and many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. So Jesus lays it all out there. Mm-hmm. His preface at the start, though, I think is really important. See that no one leads you astray. The only way that that makes sense in context is if there's going to be a lot of deception. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that later on, that many will fall away, many will betray one another and hate one another.
Yeah,
I think as Christians, let's set the stage here for where we're at. We've talked a little bit about, we had this kind of left or right turn at the COVID pandemic, where it seemed like we stepped into an alternate universe, bizarro world. And here we are, 2024. We have a presidential election. We have many important elections here in the state of Montana. We have this constitutional amendment that's been proposed. And, you know, just outside of our building, they're trying to gather signatures for to put abortion in our Montana Constitution. The manner in which we elect officials, there's a constitutional amendment to change that in Montana. I mean, we could have a radically different state if these amendments are successful. We could have a radically different country, depending on who's elected as president. We could have a radically different judiciary here in the state of Montana, depending on the Supreme Court elections. I mean, it feels like there's a lot at stake in this coming election year. It's a very important election. Beyond that, there's also a feeling, and I think both sides of the political spectrum would recognize this, there's a feeling of uncertainty about what's going to happen, who's going to be in control, who will have power and authority in this nation and in this state. And certainly, if you don't have hope in Christ, I would imagine that uncertainty and that anxiety is pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
And would make you uncomfortable enough to get involved, to go out and volunteer or collect signatures or knock doors for a candidate. In the same way that folks on the social conservative side of things, church-going folks, are getting uncomfortable and getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that what you're seeing, Patrick?
Yeah, and you know, I worry that a lot of people are putting their hope in the victory of these things.
Mm.
They're putting hope. Their hope is resting in defeating CI 128. And that it'll all be okay once we just defeat that, which we will.
That's right.
People are putting their hope that, you know, Donald Trump, who will be the likely nominee against Biden, at least with the world that we live in right now, everything could change on a dime, I suppose. But right now, there's a lot of hope that he will change course for our country and stop these crazy escalations where it feels like World War III is just right around the corner. And I think that we have to reject that. I think that we have to, I mean, if you get to the point where you're let down on those things, what does that do to you? And what kind of leader can you be to your family? Are you going to be able to be a loving person to your neighbors if you have lost hope because those things didn't turn out the way that you wanted? our hope has to be in Jesus. Our hope has to be that he already has victory. Even though it seems like everything is going downhill, we already have the victory. It's the already, but not yet. And I see that. I went to a college group to speak with them about some of this stuff that we talk about. And there was, you know, several people there that were not believers. There was one individual in particular, really, really kind person. We really hit it off and, you know, exchanged phone numbers afterwards because we wanted to stay in communication on some of these things. And as a non-believer, there wasn't much hope in some of the things that I was sharing, because when I talk about, you know, what's going on in the world and where we're headed and the fights that are before us and what we're facing, you know, it feels like you're standing against Goliath. You're facing Goliath. You're facing down Goliath.
Right.
And if you don't believe that you can win because of something that is completely outside of your control, Jesus, that you're actually going to win because of Jesus. If you don't have that,
right,
if you don't even have a belief in God, that there's something better that's possible outside of what you're capable of, I have a hard time seeing hope for that. And so I think a lot of those people put their hope in wins here or there. It'll turn around at the end of the year. It'll turn around at the end of the legislative session. It'll turn around by the end of next year. But what if it doesn't? What if it continues down the trajectory that we've been watching? Are we going to lose hope? Are we going to lose love for others? Or, you know, we can't. We're not called to do that.
Yeah, we can't be wrapped up in that. I mean, we talk about the passage from Matthew 24 that we just read. You know, it's not a story of rainbows and unicorns and, you know, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow here. That does not sound good. It's not a good trajectory, right, that Jesus is describing here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about earthquakes and tribulations, people being put to death, wars, rumors of wars. That sounds like a lot of uncertainty, anxiety. It sounds terrifying, right?
Yeah.
But there's that promise at the end. You know, there's that promise, you know, the one who endures to the end will be saved. There's another promise that I love, John 16:33. And Jesus talks about, you know, take heart, you know, I have overcome the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we will have tribulations in this world, but Jesus has overcome. And if you're right, if you don't have that hope, if you're placing your hope in a government that aspires to deity, government's going to let you down. Man is going to let you down. Politicians will let you down.
Or whatever it may be. I mean, I know people who we would say are on our side of the political spectrum, but their faith is in AI or sure. Their faith is in cryptocurrency, you know? These, you know, hopefully, I think their vision of a decentralized technology that can spell hope for mankind to escape from the oppression of government. But I think that is, I don't think that's a good strategy.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, what does it say? For the love of money is the root of all evil. So, I mean, either way you slice it, it's until Jesus returns, we're going to have problems.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be. But, you know, getting back to this feeling, and it's palpable, mm-hmm. and you can quantify it because you've just seen an outpouring of people that are engaged. They've never done anything like this in their lives, and they're reaching out and they're saying, how do I get involved? Mm-hmm. How can I make Montana, preserve Montana for the kingdom of God, for my grandchildren, for my children? How do I keep my kids safe at school? And you know, we've talked about this too in terms of quantifying this feeling that we've had, that there's some sort of awakening. I mean, we see it in various areas. One of those areas is with schools. You know, you've seen a rise in homeschooling, in alternative schools, mm-hmm. you know, people pulling their kids out of public schools, you know, and this is no, you know, we're I'm not disparaging public school education. We're for school choice, you know, finding the best educational environment for your children. But parents have really been empowered in the last few years to do just that.
Well, and I also think people recognize and view public school as the old institution. There are undoubtedly good public schools that are serving kids well.
Right.
There are, you know, good public school teachers. We know these things, but they are seen by society as being the old institution. And so they're starting to fall away in some ways.
What about the old institution of media?
Oh, yeah. Well, they say that distrust of media right now is the highest it's ever been recorded. And mainstream media, that is. And that goes into everything. That goes to messages that you see, news, ads. People are very skeptical and distrusting of all of everything that they see right now. Joe Rogan is probably considered, you know, is probably the actual mainstream media right now.
Yeah.
I forget how many millions of views an episode has, but I think it's like 200 million views or something like that.
It's pretty close to our numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, you know, and Tucker Carlson,
right.
Just huge show. Brett, trying to think of Weinstein. Some of these other guys. Well, Brett Weinstein, you know, he had a kind of conversion,
right.
As a liberal university professor who kind of had an awakening and started speaking on a lot of these talk shows. I mean, he has his, I think it's called the Dark Horse podcast that he does that has a lot of views. Russell Brand, that's who I was thinking of over in the UK. He, you know, he's got a ton of views and the government hate it. It feels like, you know, they're pushing against it because the government figured out a long time ago how to control the existing institution of media. And they use that, I think, to the detriment of the people of the whole world for a long time for different reasons and in different ways. But because there has now been a rejection of those old institutions of media and a rebirth of a new institution of, you know, podcasts, I found it interesting. They were talking about why are podcasts so popular? And one of the thoughts was because a lot of people don't have the ability or the opportunities to go and have conversations like this with adults or with people. And so they feel like they can sit in on the conversation. And it's like, this is what we used to do a long time ago. It's fun, man. It's fun to just
like sitting around the campfire.
Yeah. Just sitting and
Derek and Patrick.
People. Yeah. Talking about stuff. And it's like, this is good for people. And because of technology and social media, not very many people are doing it as much.
Right.
It's such a wild thing to say that that's actually happening, but that's maybe one reason why, you know, this institution is starting to prop up podcasts as a main form of media.
Yeah. And well, and it's a great way for us to connect with those folks out there who are waking up, who are hungry and thirsty to get involved. And, you know, if you're listening, thank you. Mm-hmm. We appreciate your prayers and your support and your listening and, you know, reach out, connect with us.
Yeah. And that just continues. I mean, entertainment industry, Hollywood's collapsing.
I was thinking that. Think about Angel Studios.
Yep.
Alternatives to those old institutions. Even, you know, we can draw an analogy to the gladiators in the Colosseum back in the Roman Empire with our professional sports teams. Mm-hmm. You know, people are fed up with, you know, the NFL, you know, had a big falling out from its fan base over the Star Spangled Banner debacle and Colin Kaepernick taking a knee and you know it's these sorts of things turn people away from these old institutions, you know, professional sports and you know, Hollywood.
Ooh, there was another really fascinating one, comic books. Uh-huh. The gentleman named Eric July, he used to be a part of a group, I guess, rap, metalcore group, libertarian stuff. They were called Backwards. But he was very upset with the wokeism that was running rampant inside of comic books, DC and Marvel Comics. And so he created a brand new comic book series that he, you know, universe. And I think he called it the Ripaverse. And he launched it on, you know, one of those platforms where you can, you know, get support for your project. I'm going to blank on the name of
it. Crowdsourcing.
Yeah. Yeah. Some crowdsourcing.
GoFundMe.
Yeah. And he had a goal of, I think, like $100,000 within the first, I think it was 7 days or something like that. And by the end of 7 days, he had raised $3 million for this project. And it was like something no one had ever seen before. And it was just like, I mean, think about the audience of comic books, probably, you know, kind of a unique niche group of people. Yeah. And even those communities are hungry for something different. They are rejecting the old institutions of comic books.
Well, and think about that applying to the church.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Think about that applying to the church in this nation, in the state of Montana. Mm-hmm. Is that old institution dying? Or is it waking up? I mean, back in, and you may remember this, back in 2023, just a year ago, we had story after story, especially in the spring of 2023, of these revivals taking place. It started at Asbury University in Wilmore, Kentucky. And it was this 2 week long, or more actually,
worship session.
Yeah, it was just worship and baptisms and people just on fire for God. And it continued at the University of Kentucky in Rupp Arena, Western Kentucky University, Union College, University of the Cumberlands, Eastern Kentucky University. It just swept through Kentucky, went up to Tennessee and Lee University, Grace Christian Academy, up to down to Alabama and Samford University, Cedarville University in Ohio, Ohio State University, and the list goes on and on. You know, we saw these revivals taking place in this younger generation of college students who were just hungry for the Word of God. And is that a critique on the institution of the church? Mm-hmm. That doesn't, you know, some churches may not, you know, have a divorce rate in their congregation that's any different from the world. Our church is failing our families. Our church is failing our kids. Does the church need to wake up?
Yeah.
And get involved on these issues more? And I'm not trying to disparage churches or you know, be a Debbie Downer in any way, Patrick.
Yeah, but they don't get a pass.
No.
It's not like because you're a church, you're unaffected by the culture war or this awakening that's taking place or the ideas, the battle of ideas that are taking place. These battle place of ideas are happening in the church community. I listen to podcasts, you know, from different viewpoints from people in the church. And there's very different viewpoints in the church that exist right now.
Yeah.
That I think some of them are rooted in a more woke, ideological version of Christianity. And then some that are probably, you know, really extreme to the other end of that. And then some that just want to keep their heads down and not be involved in it. And so, like, you know, these debates are happening in the church. As believers and as people that are awake to what's happening, we should do what we can to be involved respectfully and lovingly in these conversations. The day of not wanting to offend people because your ideas are different from other people's is gone.
Yeah.
It set sail. 2020 officially made it official that you got to be involved.
Well, and what I found interesting in doing some research for this episode is that it may have been even earlier than either you or I think. You know, back in 1989. So I existed at that point. I was 1 year old. There was a sermon delivered in 1989 in Times Square Church in New York City by Pastor Dave Wilkerson. And he issued this proclamation, quote, America is dying. The country's wound is incurable. It is now in the final throes of a terminal disease. The great empire is crumbling, end quote. And this message that he delivered at that time had five main points. America is a sinful nation, and it's currently experiencing the judgment of God. And have we seen that play out over the last 35 years? Boy, it seems like it. I think America in 1989 was a much different place than it is today.
Right.
Number two, God has raised up many prophetic voices to call America to repentance and to warn that continued rebellion will lead to doom. Man, I think of, you know, just the most current example I can think of is Eric Metaxas and his letter to the American church.
Yeah.
We did a whole podcast episode about that. But there have been many others. Number three, America has refused to listen to these prophets, and instead the nation has stiffened in its rebellion against God.
Mm-hmm.
I liken that to Pharaoh's heart being hardened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is America experiencing plagues, so to speak? Are we plagued by the result of our sin? Number four, the result is that America has passed the point of no return, the point of, quote, dread release, end quote, when God delivers a nation from judgment to destruction. And number five, and thus, the wrath of God is about to fall on this nation, most likely in the form of an economic collapse from which there will be no recovery. So those were the five main points summarized in that sermon in 1989. And here we are with record inflation in the country.
That's so much worse than what they're telling us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when we hear that it's like only, what do they say it is right now? 3 or 4%?
Yeah, I think it's...
And you go to the store and milk is double the cost of what it used to be. Yeah. Bananas. Hey, bananas are cheap still, y'all. Eat them bananas. Those are good for you.
For now.
For now. But it is just ridiculous. I mean, it's not sustainable.
It's axiomatic. It's readily apparent. Mm-hmm. We're preaching to the choir, whether you're a Christian or not. If you go to the store, you're paying more for your groceries. You go to the gas station, you're paying more for your gas. You fly, you travel, you're paying more. You get a hotel room, you're paying more. I mean, everything costs more.
And they just passed a $100 billion package.
Yeah.
So it's going to get even worse.
Yeah. I not just for us today. I think, you know, that debt is being strapped to the backs of our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah.
But that's why we can't place our faith in politicians. And so, you know, this prediction, so to speak, in 1989 of the judgment of America, I mean, it kind of mirrors the idea of the fourth turning, that concept, you know, the cyclical nature of culture and society and history. And so maybe, and there's no way for us to prove this, but maybe it's right. Maybe we are on the precipice of old institutions dying.
I think we're in the middle of them. I think it's happening all around us.
Yeah.
And I think the precipice is who is in control of that new world where there's new institutions. I think that is the question. I think it's happening all around us. And I think the answer still is just like, well, who is in control of that new world now? And there's a lot of different answers floating around out there.
Well, and if the church doesn't wake up, if it doesn't respond to this call of the times and stand up for truth and for God's truth, you know, maybe we are doomed. Maybe we will suffer the wrath of God's judgment. You know, so it's on us to be uncomfortable with the way things are, with the moral depravity in our nation and in our state, to stand up and say, no, this is not right. And so, you know, we don't have a, you know, a solid answer, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of maybes, but there's certainly a palpable feeling out there mm-hmm. that we're on the verge of something. Well,
and like you know, we don't need to have the answers in this podcast. I mean, I think that we get to a place sometimes where we're like, what's the last piece of advice to give our listeners, you know, every single time. And, you know, these are the ramblings of two guys who are, you know, very passionate and committed to advancing, you know, righteousness through our work, and, you know, just blessed beyond belief to be able to do that for such an amazing organization and work with such great people all across the state. And, you know, we're grappling with the same questions that everyone else who's listening to this are grappling with. And it's just fun, hopefully, to share it with you guys sometimes, everyone who's listening. And I think one thing that we could probably announce or talk a little bit about is we've been toying with this idea of doing a Q&A podcast where we take questions from listeners about, you know, whatever it is. You know, we can take all types of questions, I suppose, and kind of figure out what that looks like. But I think we're gonna put together a Q&A episode, figure out how to take questions.
Yeah, I mean, as we sit here right now, we're on episode 17, and I just feel blessed to have had that many episodes and to still have listeners. So it's wonderful if you're still listening to us. You know, we want to keep things fresh and current and up to date and give you the information that you need about, you know, where things stand here in Montana and in the nation and you know, whatever insight we can provide for you. That's what we want. But we also want to be responsive mm-hmm. to questions that you might have, you know, about Montana politics, to the extent that we're able to answer them, about issues, about potential legislation. It could be anything, whatever's on your mind. We want to set up, whether that's through our social media accounts or on our website at the Montana Family Foundation, you know, a way for you to ask those questions. And then we're going to take an episode, a dedicated episode, to answer those questions. Be on the lookout for that. We'll give you more information as we get closer, and check out our Facebook page, check out our website, montanafamily.org, for more information on the Q&A episode. And to that end, you know, just kind of to wrap things up and put a bow on this episode, and we don't have time to get dive in too much into this, but in Matthew 22, Jesus is asked, actually by a lawyer, which I find funny, a lawyer who was trying to trip him up, test Jesus. He said, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." And the reason I bring that up, Patrick, to your credit, because you're the one that pointed this out, you know, and wanted to talk about this, but so often we view issues, whether it's constitutional initiatives or candidates or what have you, we view it as an us versus them. You know, we have that sort of mentality, but the reality is these are our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are called, commanded to love them as ourselves. And I think that's really important to remember, especially in these times. And within the context of Matthew 24, the other passage that we read, you know, we're told that many people, their love will grow cold. So don't let that happen to you. Don't be deceived. don't let your love grow cold, even on, you know, very difficult issues like abortion or the transgender ideology or things like this. Don't let your love grow cold. You're commanded to love your neighbor as yourself. And, you know, first of all, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul.
Amen. Yeah, no, that's good. I have nothing to add.
Well, with that, folks, I just want to thank you again for tuning in to the Family Matters podcast. Thank you for your prayers and your support. If you would like to get more involved in Montana politics, or if you feel a calling to get your church involved, or your pastor needs to hear our podcast, or what have you, visit our website, www.montanafamily.org. You can also reach out to Patrick or I, patrick@montanafamily.org, or derek@montanafamily.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your questions and maybe answer them on our Q&A episode. If you would like to support our efforts at the Montana Family Foundation, we are engaged in a battle to oppose Constitutional Initiative 128. Please visit our website. Please donate to the cause, whether that's with your time or your money. Thank you, and God bless.